a little worried already. And then I realized that you don't have to put up with me for almost 4 months. So I'm just going to have at it. Holy and amazing God, startle us with your grace that we might be enlightened as to how we can be living expressions of that grace into the world, in this world of non-grace. Amen. Brian McLaren, a well-known author and speaker, we used his book last summer. He was speaking at a conference, and he was talking about how we can get so locked in to our worldview that we sometimes miss the presence of God. So honest to God, to illustrate his point, he split the audience in half. And he said, over here, there's going to be two people in white shirts tossing a ball back and forth. Over here, there's going to be two people in black shirts tossing a ball back and forth. So what I want you to do is to focus, pay attention, concentrate on how many times the ball is tossed back and forth. And he said, ready, set, go. And the ball started to get tossed back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And after a while, he said, all right, stop. And he went over here and said, okay, how many times was the ball passed back and forth? And, you know, everybody yelled out, interestingly, it's not that hard, but everybody yelled out different numbers. And then over here he said, okay, how many times was the ball passed back and forth? And more numbers were yelled out. Then he said, how many of you saw the gorilla? What? And sure enough, he dressed up a guy in a gorilla suit. And while people were passing the balls back and forth, and while people were focused and concentrating on counting the number of times the ball was passed back and forth, he had this man in the gorilla suit walk down the center of the aisle between everybody. And nearly everybody missed it. How can you miss a man in a gorilla suit? It seems that we can get so locked into our worldview that it's hard to imagine a different way of seeing, a different way of thinking, a different way of living. One of my favorite novels, 19th century novel by Victor Hugo, Les Miserables, which was recently made, as you all know, into a movie. First Broadway musical I ever saw. Amazing. That amazing scene of grace where Jean Valjean's worldview is shattered, exploded. Now Jean Valjean, the criminal, is released. A priest, an old priest, bishop, takes him in, feeds him, gives him a bed to sleep in, no questions asked. While the priest is sleeping, Jean Valjean, and he knows only one way of being, one way of surviving, he steals his silverware, and he runs away. The police catch him. The police bring him back, and they throw him at the feet of the priest, you know, waiting for the priest to say, yes, he stole my silverware, and then they can throw him in prison where he belongs. Now, Jean Valjean, as you know, knows that he knows he is guilty. And he knows he's as good as dead. When the priest does something that makes no sense, he does something that turns everybody's expectations on its ear. He says, yes, I gave Jean Valjean the silverware, but you forgot. And he took two priceless candlesticks, handed them to him, and said, and you forgot to take these. That act of grace that defied logic, that really made no sense in as the way the world computes things, that act of grace transformed Jean Valjean's heart. It literally exploded his worldview. It changed, not only changed the way he saw the world, it changed the way he saw people. It changed the way that he lived in the world. Grace, that word grace, you know our mission statement, creating spaces of grace. The word grace is subversive. I mean, the word grace is the gorilla walking down the center of the aisle. Because grace, this idea of grace, exists outside of the way we are taught to think and to succeed and to survive in our world. I mean, grace, I've been really thinking about this. Grace, by its very nature, is unfair. A writer suggested that fairness, you know, the concept of fairness that is so important to us, that fairness is a human construct. Think about grace. Grace essentially means a gift you didn't earn. A gift that maybe perhaps you don't deserve. And our world, by and large, operates in a state of non-grace. Some might argue disgrace, but I won't go there. An eye for an eye. You bomb me, I'm bombing you. You pay what you owe, or I take your house away. Only those who can pay for it get health care. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Work hard, you'll get rewarded. Look after number one. What other messages do we hear on a daily basis? There are winners and there are losers. There's us and them. We're grace in the midst of all of that. Is the gorilla in the middle of the room that we don't see often. But when we see it, it invites us to live in a way that defies common sense. It invites us to be more generous and loving that may even seem wise. We're exploring the parables of Jesus this month. And I'm going to share today a parable that many suggest is the hardest, the most difficult one to wrap our mind around. I don't know what I was thinking when I picked this one. And one writer said, parables, the reason Jesus told stories, the reason Jesus kind of spoke in parables is he wasn't necessarily interested in people learning orthodox truth from him, as he was interested in stretching their imagination, as he was interested in exploding their worldview, inviting them to think in a whole new way. Remember last week I said parables are like playing catch, you know, tossing the ball back and forth? But what Jesus did is he tossed the ball off to the side, never beyond the grasp, but off to the side, that if you're to catch the wisdom and the grace in the story, you have to move. You have to stretch. And sometimes when people say, this is what this means, and this is how you should think, and this is what you should believe, that's like giving you the ball. Jesus never did that. He tossed it and wondered, will you move? Will you stretch? So Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is like in this story. Now, he's not talking here about the afterlife. As he's talking about, this is how things should be now. This story is what the economy of grace looks like. And it's different than what you expect, and different than the way the world lives. A couple quick backdrop context things. This is a story about a landowner owning a vineyard and some workers in the vineyard. A landowner in the time of Jesus was despised. Those who are gathered around to hear this story, they would despise a landowner. A landowner was the one who oppressed people, who exploited people, that they might amass more wealth for themselves. And the fact that this is a vineyard makes it even worse, because only the wealthy got wine. So this particular situation, when Jesus is using the example of a landowner, the minute he says landowner, most people would hiss, boo, you know, boo, hiss, hate them, hate them. It would be like saying, me today saying, the kingdom of God is like a corrupt Wall Street CEO. That's what I mean, we forget sometimes when Jesus talked, people went, what? Huh? And the other key little background is the workers were given a denarius. Now, that's not just only a unit of money. It's a symbol that represents enough. A denarius is a living wage. A denarius means you can go home and you have enough to feed your family. So with that, Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day, and he sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, you also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right. So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did the same thing. At the end of the day, about the 11th hour, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing? Because no one has hired us, they answered. He said to them, you too go and work in my vineyard. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the workers and pay them their wages. Beginning with the last ones hired, and then going on to the first. The workers who were hired about the 11th hour came, and they each received a denarius. So in those who came, who were hired first, they, of course, expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. These men who were hired last, I mean, they worked only 1 hour. And you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day? But he answered one of them, friend, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who has hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first, and the first will be last. What do you think? What? Huh? Imagine a world. Imagine a world where we're not focused so much on what we get. We're not so fearful and anxious. Will I get enough? We're not so focused on, will I get what I deserve? Will I get what I'm entitled to? Imagine a world where instead our focus was that everyone had enough, especially those most vulnerable. Even if it meant that we had to sacrifice. Imagine a world where people realized No one really wins. No one really wins. You may think you're winning, but no one really wins until everyone wins. Imagine a world again where it wasn't so much about getting, but what can I give? It says in the story that they each received a denarius for the day. A denarius, again, not only a money unit, but that symbol that means enough. You have enough to go home and feed your family. Jesus said, give us this day, our daily bread. Imagine a world where everybody has their daily bread. Everybody. Why do you suppose the people who were hired first, the people who were in the sun working hard all day long, what stopped them from celebrating? Those who were hired last, what stopped them from celebrating that they got to go home that night to feed their family? What stops us? You know, I think Jesus knew exactly how we'd react to this particular story when he told the story. I mean, I suspect Jesus assumed most people would be in the shoes of those hired first who'd been in the sun working all day, and they'd go, wait a minute! That ain't fair! That's not how things work! Anybody there? Come on, be honest. I am. I'm there. But then I began to imagine what it's like to be in the shoes of the one hired last. How hard it must be to be waiting. Will I get picked? Will I get chosen? Will I get hired? Who are the ones, generally speaking, that are hired last? The poor, the vulnerable, the hungry, the weak, the least, the expendable, the marginalized. I mean, the landowner said, why are you still standing here? He didn't say, hey, I got a quick money-making scheme for you. He said, why are you still standing here? They said, no one has hired us. There's no work for me. I'm not needed. So here we have the image of a landowner who perhaps cares more about the unemployed and the expendable and the left behind and the marginalized than he cares about the profit margin. I mean, that would have blown the wire circuitry of everybody hearing that day. Here we have a landowner who seems to care deeply about those who have been forgotten. You know, the left behinds on the ball field. Have you been there where they're choosing sides? And you're wondering, am I going to get chosen? And you're the last one there. And one, you're not even sure you're going to get chosen, but when they choose you, you know they don't want you. A friend of mine who has a child with Down syndrome, a daughter with Down syndrome, helped me see this parable in a whole new way. She said, you may sympathize with the one working hard out in the field all day long. I understand that. But she says, I sympathize with the one who's been waiting in the city square all day long. Because the boss more than likely chose the ones who looked the most able. And at the end, the weak and the vulnerable and the smallest, maybe even the hungriest, are the ones left standing. And she said, I have seen my child again and again and again and again passed over. Maybe next time. So you think, she said, there's no effort expended in waiting, hoping? Do you think there's no work? Those workers are not standing idle, she said. They are expending every ounce of their energy, doing the best they can not to cry. In the story, it says that each person is given a denarius for the day. Enough. You know, when we focus on ourselves, when we get caught in that fear and anxiety, you know, will there be enough for me? Will I get what I think I'm entitled to? We get very narrow. When we can look beyond ourselves and be in the shoes of the last and the least, we realize this story is like the gorilla. Incredible grace and generosity. I was thinking this last week of my best relationships. It just dawned on me that my best relationships are not based upon how wonderful I am, even though I am. My best relationships are not based on my performance, based on how hard I work. I realize that my best relationships are based on the forgiveness I'm given, the patience I'm offered, the acceptance I receive, the grace that is extended to me, especially when I least deserve it. And when I receive that grace, everything changes. And it occurs to me that God is the one, again and again and again, that God is the one that says, I choose you. I need you. I have work for you to do. You have value in my realm. Even when you're at your worst. And when I realize that every gift, every breath I take, is a gift. It's these moments that I see the gorilla in the middle of the room. And that gorilla invites me to a way of living that defies common sense. You know, we can't count on life being fair. But we can count on the generosity and the grace of God. And when we make room and space in our lives, in our hearts, for that grace and generosity, we end up living in a way that doesn't make sense to the world. But maybe that's the only way the world will change. May it be so. We continue to worship God as the offering is received.